The Trump administration are basically the second coming of the Nazis, and Germany is uniquely capable of confronting them. That was the implication of German Chancellor Friedrich Merz's speech to the Munich Security Conference over the weekend. This security conference is the biggest public event of the year for NATO. It's kind of an annual State of the Union on how the US and its European allies are getting along. Last year, J.D. Vance made headlines for what was perceived as an attack on the EU and many European politicians. This year, we got a pretty different picture. We'll look at this critical snapshot in relations on today's Trumpet World.
We are connected spiritually, and we are connected culturally. We want Europe to be strong. We believe that Europe must survive. Because the two great wars of the last century serve for us as history's constant reminder that ultimately our destiny is and will always be intertwined with yours.
We Germans know a world in which might makes right would be a dark place. Our country has gone down this path in the 20th century until the bitter and dreadful end. Today, we embark on a different, a better path.
Those two clips from Marco Rubio and Friedrich Merz encapsulates the conference. Rubio got a standing ovation basically for being nice, or at least saying some quite nice things about Europe. But German Chancellor Friedrich Merz opened the conference with his talk of a new dark world that Donald Trump is taking the world into. That was not the only remarkable thing about his speech. There was a lot packed in there. There's a lot of noteworthy features from the other speeches at the conference. So to help us digest what we saw this weekend, I'm joined by our German correspondent, Joshua Michels. Joshua, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be here.
So let's start out by focusing on Friedrich Merz's speech. It was one of the most remarkable, and it occurred right at the start of the conference. What do you see as some of the main takeaways from that speech?
Yeah, Germany is obviously hosting this conference in Munich, and they have some say in who they're inviting in and even on the schedule of things. And this time they chose to have the German Chancellor give the opening speech, partly because they didn't want to have the same scene with J.D. Vance last year, where he kind of set the tone of the conference and everyone else was reacting to it. And this time it was the German Chancellor that was attempting to really set the tone for the whole conference. And he did it in a very gloomy way, which is also with the motto of the whole conference, which is under destruction. It talks about a rule-based order.
Über dieser Konferenz steht ein düsteres Motto.
You've chosen a grim motto for this conference, under destruction.
Dieses Motto meint wohl,
and it probably means that the international order based on rights and rules
ist im Begriff, is zerstört
currently being destroyed.
Ich fürchte,
but I'm afraid
wir müssen es noch
we have to put it in even harsher terms.
Diese Ordnung,
this order,
so unvollkommen
as flawed as it has been even in its heyday,
sie gibt es
no longer exists.
So he has a lot of references to the post-World War II era and how Germany has learned the lessons from this post-World War II era, but how this era is not just under destruction, he says, it has already ended. And that's an allusion to America, who was the foundation of this order, withdrawing from it. But also, as he said later on, that China is taking a leading role and perhaps already replacing the United States as a global leader. And we can play a clip for that as well.
China wants to be a leader in shaping the world, and it has paved the ground for that over many years with strategic patience. In the foreseeable future, Beijing could be on an equal footing with the United States in military terms. China systematically uses dependencies of others, and it redefines the international order in its own favor. If there had been a unipolar moment after the fall of the Berlin Wall, a unipolar moment in history, it has long passed. The United States' claim to leadership has been challenged and possibly lost.
In a way, he is setting up here the reality of it as it is, the growing GDP of China, the growing military presence. And we have seen it in the trade dispute between the United States and China, where Donald Trump wanted to tariff China, but then had to back out of that threat again, seeing what leverage China has. But for a German chancellor to say that the United States is losing its leading role in the world shows that Germany is looking for other players, and they have the opportunity to side with the United States or with China. And was telling that Friedrich Merz, he was meeting with the Chinese foreign minister, I believe, the next day. So they're just showing, like, we don't need to rely on you, America, if you don't believe in the rule-based order anymore.
And I think this is the central narrative from Europe, not just at the security conference. And I think it's one that is worth discussing. Like this, the European narrative is that that America and the Europeans combined created the rules-based international order in the world after World War II. And the rules-based international order banished the form of great power politics that we saw ultimately culminate in World War II. And that the world has been a much better place because of that over the last 80 years. Okay, it hasn't banished wars. Friedrich Merz in that clip emphasized, okay, it is imperfect. But there hasn't been another world war on the scale of World War II. And that Donald Trump, now with his transactional approach and his insist on America first and his question of, okay, but what tangible benefits am I getting for the American people on this investment, that he is undermining and destroying this global order. And in doing so, he is threatening the United States and he is threatening Europe. I think that's the European case. I think that's the Democrat case within the United States as well. I think it's the case, the point of view within some Republican circles in the United States as well. And I think it's a load of rubbish. That this rules-based order is not what kept the relative peace for the last 80 years. I think, saying this as a non-American, it was largely American strength. It was the fact that you had two superpowers, nuclear superpowers, the Soviet Union and the United States. And then since the fall of the Soviet Union, just the unbalanced dominance of the United States. And what I think has happened is Europe has weaponized this so-called rules-based order. And with their armies of human rights lawyers and things like the European Convention on Human Rights, they have worked to create a trade regime, a regime of international law that does benefit them. You know, the rules-based international order is upheld really by American military spending. It enables European powers to have their very generous welfare states and retirements and pensions without having to foot the bill for their defense in the way that the American system has to. And they basically then used the excuse of the rules-based order as moral justification for this status quo. And it's almost an emotional blackmail. You need to pay for our defense, because if you don't, you are single-handedly responsible for taking the world back to the era of great power politics in World War II. And okay, I mean, that is kind of the Trumpian view. That is the case that J.D. Vance really articulated last year, and kind of Marco Rubio as well, but perhaps a bit more nicely and politely. You could say, okay, well, that's just your view. But I think there is, we analyze news from the perspective of the Bible prophecy, and I think there is clear biblical truth backing that view. You look at Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. It says, "The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked above all things. Who can know it?" Human nature hasn't changed since World War II. Human nature is too evil to kind of have this rules-based international order where we say, okay, I'm not going to do what is in the main interest of my nation. I'm just going to uphold the rules, because we all benefit from the rules being upheld. We're all too selfish for that. Nations are all too selfish for that. And instead, nations have been using this rules-based order just as an excuse to do what they're doing anyway. And I think you see something like the expiry of the New START Treaty a few weeks ago is the perfect example of this, where you had this New START Treaty between the United States and Russia. This allowed, it freed Russia from a nuclear competition that they couldn't afford. And basically, Russia had to make the cuts to their nuclear arsenal that they were going to make anyway, and the United States made a bunch of cuts. After that happened, Russia just ignored it. And China wasn't covered by it anyway. So you have China going gangbusters on building this massive nuclear arsenal. You have Russia completely ignoring not just this, but all of their nuclear arms controls treaties. And then America says, we're not going to renew the New START Treaty, and all the hands point at Donald Trump. You have just gotten rid of the last arms control treaty. You are taking us towards nuclear World War III. And that is the hypocrisy behind all of the US, the rules-based international order. America keeps the rules. The other nations take advantage of that. And if America stands up for itself, or it says, well, we'll have a START treaty, we'll have a nuclear arms control treaty, but only one that includes China and only one that Russia actually sticks to. And if you're not prepared to do that, we're not going to have an arms control treaty that applies only to us. And at that point, America gets attacked. And so this, I think, is a massive tool that Europe is using right now to demonize the United States. But I think the European narrative is simple. It's appealing. It's being amplified on both sides of the Atlantic by a media in the United States that believes that narrative as well. And like I mentioned in the introduction, and this is a narrative that allows Germany to play itself, to portray itself as really uniquely prepared to confront the United States. And that was the real, you know, he very deliberately, and it was in diplomatic language, but Friedrich Merz very deliberately set up this parallel between Donald Trump and the Nazis. We've seen what happens when a country goes into unrestrained power politics. The implication being that's what America's doing now. It didn't end well for us in Germany. We're warning America not to do it, and we're going to confront this. And it, you know, it says that Germany confronted this before. Germany has this experience. Germany knows better the fruits of that way of life than anyone. And so Germany is the white knight, the champion to rally the world and to confront the United States. And this was there in Merz's speech. We've had discussions, you and I, Joshua, just about how this is there in German media. I think you were looking into, I don't think you've written it up yet, the state broadcaster, ARD, kind of Germany's equivalent of PBS, having a big, I think they had a series on Jews moving from the United States to Germany. And this is something that's been all over the US media because it feeds into this narrative that Donald Trump is the new Nazis and Germany is the salvation. And you've now got Jews that left Germany, or the descendants of Jews that left Germany after 1945, they're now returning. And how much did you see, or is there anything else that you saw from that speech in tying into that narrative?
Yeah, just about that, the Jews moving to Germany, part of it is because Germany changed the law where they can be dual citizens now, so that actually increased the numbers, but it does fuel into this same narrative. And also along those same lines, Germany sees itself as the one that has learned the lessons from World War II and is ready to teach the world now. It plays in with the Israel narrative too, where Israel has been fighting Gaza terrorists and Germany is the one saying like, hey, what you're doing is exactly what we have been doing in World War II, and we are here to tell you that we do not tolerate such behavior because we are the ones who know where such thinking is leading. So it's the same reasoning that Germany is now on a moral superior level because of World War II. So they really have changed the lesson from World War II 180 degrees, where they are now saying like, we are not ashamed of our history anymore. No, actually, we are the only ones that have learned lesson from history. And I think that reasoning is very dangerous because it gives the German people again a moral superiority. And that's something that you can rally people around. If you see, the Germans will not go to a war because of some kind of a lunatic stepping up. But if someone gives them a righteous cause, we are the defenders of the free world. We are the ones that can take the place of the United States. And that's really what Merz was talking about. He was talking about China rising and the US leaving the global order. Who is there to replace America in this global order? We can't leave it to China. It has to be Germany that has learned that lesson. And I also found it interesting, the hypocrisy again, where they say that America's leaving that order, as you said, and now they're making a free trade agreement with India, because free trade is that great thing. Look, Donald Trump is putting tariffs on people, and we are building free trade. But India has been buying Russian oil. They have been making agreements where Indian people can go work and fill up the workplaces in Russia to keep the economy going. So they are getting closer to Russia, but Germany is saying, like, because they agree on free trade, we are closer with them than we are with the United States. But you can see any country you compare it with the United States have a lot of moral problems, but when it comes to freedom and rules, they are still far ahead of China, obviously, or India. So it is not about establishing the rule-based order, as you said, but it's taking advantage of this very moment in time.
I mean, that hypocrisy with India is huge. Because it's like, well, India, the entire reason why Donald Trump had sanctions on India is because of India's trade with Putin and buying oil from Putin. And Russia and Europe is constantly lecturing Donald Trump and America, and you're not doing enough to confront Putin. You're not doing enough to confront Putin. Oh, let's sign a free trade deal with India and help them keep trading with Putin. And then we'll go back to lecturing the United States. A really good point. And then perhaps the bulk, or certainly a lot then, of the rest of Merz's speech was about Merz making this case for Germany as the white knight against the United States, and how Germany was stepping up militarily, making the case that Germany needs to step up militarily, and talking about what they're going to do. I mean, this clip here is really kind of the transition point, but towards then saying, well, because we live in this new era of state power or power politics, we need to boost our power.
Aus gewichtigen Gründen tun wir uns in Deutschland.
And it is for very good reasons that we have our difficulties in Germany with state power. Since 1945, it has been deeply enshrined in our thinking that we need to rein in this power. And let me add, it is not just too much state power that destroys the foundation of our freedom. Too little state power will lead you to a different path, but to the same result.
And you wrote in your article, by implication, Germany has a historic responsibility based on history to fight against Nazism, not just at home, but abroad. With twisted reasoning, Germany is using its past not to humble itself, but to look down on the United States. So what did Merz have to say about this strengthening of Germany and of Germany's military power in this speech?
Yeah, first of all, he highlighted a lot of what Germany has done already. They have gotten rid of the debt brake, that they can spend hundreds of billions on their military. So he's saying we are already going in the right direction. But what he really highlighted in this speech now, he first of all, as a chancellor, he first confirmed that Germany is in talks for a nuclear umbrella with France. So that was the biggest news. It has already been confirmed by a government spokesman before, but this was the first time the German chancellor said, we need to get a European nuclear umbrella. And if you see it in the context of his speech, it is to be independent from America. And then he also said the European Union, they have a common defense clause, just like NATO has, Article 42. And he said that in context of Germany sending Eurofighters to the high north, to the Greenland area, after, on January 16th, they had a NATO mission there, but they said, hey, Donald Trump, you cannot take Greenland. NATO is responsible for defending it. It is Danish territory. And if the Danish say that there's a threat from the United States, the European Union has an obligation to actually defend Greenland from the United States. So if you take the military aspects of that speech, where he's saying we're spending hundreds of billions on our military, we're looking for our own nuclear umbrella, in the context of, hey, United States, you don't mess with Greenland. It is saying that we are ready to confront you. And Donald Trump, he has backed off in some ways from his Greenland claim. So the show of strength has already worked. And Merz was just putting another layer on it with saying we are ready to pursue our own nuclear options.
Yes, I mean, I should say, I've said some positive things about the Trump administration. I did find a lot of the whole Greenland saga baffling, that there are legitimate... I understand why America would want control of Greenland and the Arctic. They already have massive rights to have bases and soldiers there. And the fact that their population is so small, America could probably buy Greenland pretty easily. You offer people $100,000 to vote to be independent from Denmark and then vote to be part of the United States in referendas. I mean, America could get that much more cheaply. And that does give a huge amount of ammunition for this European narrative of America bringing, I mean, it is the kernel of truth in this narrative of America rejecting some of the rules-based international order. But he really did showcase and repeat his desire to have the Bundeswehr be Europe's premier army. Here's what he had to say about that.
I often said that, and I will repeat it today. We will make the Bundeswehr the strongest conventional army in Europe as soon as we can. An army that stands firm when it has to.
I also thought this was perhaps the most chilling clip from the entire conference.
So the most important thing is to turn the switch in our minds now. We have understood that in the era of big powers, our freedom is no longer a given. It is at stake. We will need to show firmness and determination to assert this freedom.
Here at the Trumpet, we've been alert for a kind of mind change coming from Germany for a long time because of biblical language, Habakkuk 1 and verse 11. It's talking about a strong military leader rising in Europe. And it says, then shall his mind change and he shall pass over and offend. And I'm not necessarily saying Merz is that leader, but we've talked because of those passages and others in Isaiah 10 and others. We've talked in terms of a mind change coming on Europe and Germany. And on the Trumpet Daily on Monday, Sam Livingston played some clips even that we'd recorded from Hans Frank, the son of a former very high-ranking Nazi official who basically ran Poland for Adolf Hitler. And he talked about the danger of a mind change in Germany. Luigi Barzini, who's a secular author, he has a book, The Europeans. He was a very well-traveled Italian journalist, and he has some of his observations on different European countries in that book. And he talks about the Protean Germans, this kind of a country that is prone to very dramatic changes of mind. And so to say, well, you know, we need to change our mindset. We're doing all of these things materially to boost our military, to build more, but we need to fundamentally change the way that we think. I mean, some of those prophecies kind of leap right out at you.
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind when I heard that speech was actually, it is designed to instill war thinking in the German people. And a lot of the military commanders have used words like kriegstüchtig recently, which means war capable. And the only reason you use a word like that is to get the people in a mind of war. And if you get them to believe that the global order is at stake right now, that Germany could be at war with Russia in 3 years, then you get the people to not just be ready for the war, but also to make sacrifices in their jobs, to work more, to get ready. Like, we need to be able to defend ourselves. So I think that it is hard work to change a mentality in a people that has been forced to be pacifist in the recent years. But now they are needing to change that mentality. And it really has to be a leader that makes speeches like that. And it would need a lot more than that. But it is a start for they're trying to really change that mindset.
I mean, your point about this kind of war thinking or war ready, this came across in a lot of the media coverage over the last weekend, that there was a very clear concerted push to put this into the newspapers during the Munich Security Conference. You know, you had General Carsten Brewer, who's, I mean, basically head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for the German military, the German title. It's Inspector General, isn't it? Like, it makes it sound a bit more like a civil servant, but he's the highest ranking military official. And he had a big profile in the Wall Street Journal, where they talked about him waging a multi-front campaign to rally Germany's politicians, businesses, people, soldiers, and the general public behind efforts to speed the national rearmament. And they talked about the way that he's racing to prepare the German armed forces for war, the way that even he's trying to shortcut some of the ponderous bureaucracy, giving military commanders cash that they could just go out and buy drones off the shelf and get started, at least learning how to use them, so they don't have to wait for the first kind of military approved and built drones to filter down before they can start trying out new tactics. And at the same time, this same general, he had a joint letter alongside his British counterpart, Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton, it was in Die Welt, in The Guardian. And again, they were talking about the need to come together to arm. You also had the German Defense Minister, Boris Pistorius. He gave a speech at the Munich Security Conference. This is a quick clip from what he had to say.
It's about creating a win-win situation. I mean, producing jointly, mutually in Germany, in UK, together with Ukraine defense industry is something we all benefit from. It is about using the experiences and learning from the experience of the Ukrainian armed forces and the Ukrainian defense industry on the battlefield, and all what they do learn there, we can learn by them. So this is just about creating more security for Europe in the years to come. So this is about a real cooperation for the future.
So Germany was not just sending that message, but they're working very hard to deliberately send that message this weekend. We are ready for war. We are quickly rearming. And I mean, before we move on from Merz's speech, the other thing that did really stand out to me, and you touched on this already, is this emphasis on coalition building and the fact that Germany wants to work together with Europe, but not just Europe, with China, with others, with Canada even. There's headlines this morning about kind of Canada working with Europe and China for a new trade alliance, that Germany sees itself as really, I think, the leader of an anti-US, or at least at this point, an anti-Trump coalition. This is what he said, for example, on that front.
Big power politics in Europe, however, is not an option for Germany. Leadership in partnership, yes. Hegemonial fantasies, no. Never again will we Germans go it alone. This is the enduring lesson we've learned from our history. We assert our freedom with our neighbors, only with our neighbors and our allies and our partners. We build on our strength, our sovereignty, and our ability to show mutual solidarity in Europe. We do this with realism based on our principles.
This idea of leading a coalition is right at the heart of Merz's vision. Is there anything else you think we need to take note from that, or anything else from Merz's speech before we move on?
No, just about that anti-Trump alliance. He also met with California Governor Gavin Newsom, which made some in America very upset, even though J.D. Vance met with the far right at the last Munich security conference. But for Mertz to meet with Gavin Newsom, it shows he's like a radical left-wing Democrat, and Mertz is a supposedly conservative leader, but they appear to have more in common than Mertz and Donald Trump. So that just shows the opposition, as you say, specifically against Donald Trump. And another leader that we watch very closely, former German Defense Minister Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg, he was also at that conference and he also met with Gavin Newsom. So you really see Gavin Newsom, the Democrats that try to push him as the alternative to Donald Trump, and Germany is saying like, hey, we can contribute to what you would say regime change in America, which is very, very unusual if you interpret it that way.
Great. Well, an important opening of the conference. And then we got later on Marco Rubio's speech, not immediately after, but perhaps we'll go to that as the one of the next most important, where he emphasized instead the connection to Europe. You know, he made Europe sound loved, sound cherished. I mean, that's even his own words. This is, here's another quote from his speech.
We have fought against each other, then reconciled, then fought, then reconciled again. And we have bled and died side by side on battlefields from Kapyong to Kandahar. And I'm here today to leave it clear that America is charting the path for a new century of prosperity. And that once again, we want to do it together with you, our cherished allies and our oldest friends.
Now, as people have pointed out, in a lot of ways, what he said was still similar to J.D. Vance yesterday. There was still an expression of a disagreement in a lot of what Europe is doing or a lot of European leaders, but it was couched in much more polite terms and it was much better received. What stood out to you from that speech?
Yes, he was definitely having a passionate plea, basically a passionate plea for Europe to return to its Catholic or Christian roots, as he says, and that would be uniting America and Europe. He wanted to express hope for a common alliance in the future. But as you said, he did mention climate change. Europe has been going off track here. Migration, Europe has going off track here. And he phrased it all in the framework of Europe. You are the one that departs away from what you always believed. Our common heritage, our shared values. You are the one that has been departing, but there is hope for us to come together. So if you closely analyze it, he said pretty much the same thing as J.D. Vance, but with a more hopeful future that Europe can still be a great ally to America. But I think that Christian aspect, I think that's what stood out most to me, how he alluded to the Christian common heritage that they have together.
I agree. I mean, here's a clip where he talked about that.
And this is why we do not want our allies to be weak, because that makes us weaker. We want allies who can defend themselves so that no adversary will ever be tempted to test our collective strength. This is why we do not want our allies to be shackled by guilt and shame. We want allies who are proud of their culture and of their heritage, who understand that we are heirs to the same great and noble civilization, and who together with us are willing and able to defend it.
I think this is perhaps the most dangerous, or one of the most dangerous misconceptions from the Trump administration about Europe, because they see groups like the Alternative for Deutschland. They see groups saying we need to get back to religion. We need to get back to our culture. We need to restrict immigration. And they see that they're like, that's a mirror image of us. And they're our natural friends, they're our allies, and they're encouraging Europe to return to its roots, just like they see MAGA as returning America to its roots. And you know, maybe in there there's the kind of the false assumption even that MAGA is returning America to its roots. Like, MAGA, the MAGA movement is more traditional than say the far left. But I think they're still very different from say someone like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. I think, you know, both of those individuals would have profound things to disagree with the MAGA movement. And there's a lot of talk about Christianity and the Bible in the MAGA movement, but it is, I mean, it's different from the Christianity of the Bible, but I think it's also very different from the Christianity of 1776. And it's not the return to America's roots that they think it is. So I think there's a misunderstanding within MAGA there, but then they also think that then Europe's roots are the same as their own, and that this return that in returning to Europe's roots, they're going to have something that looks like the MAGA movement. And that is, it's a dangerous, dangerous belief. You know, that you look at what I think a lot of what was used to be much better understood within America. You know, what are some of the core American ideas? Things like freedom of religion, you know, the First Amendment, that the government doesn't dictate matters of private conscience, and that you can decide who you worship, how you worship. Freedom of thought and press and writing and communication, freedom of speech. I mean, that really stems from freedom of religion. That, I mean, that's where a whole lot of this came from. It was about preachers demanding the right to preach the truth as they saw it, rather than to preach the truth as they were commanded to. That this is right at the bedrock of American values. Is that right at the bedrock of European values? And I think anyone who knows European history would say, no, absolutely not. That this comes to America from the United Kingdom. And I guess, sadly, we have this situation where the UK has been lumped in with Europe and viewed as another European country, which, despite Brexit, I think I lament the fact that Brexit hasn't led to that greater view of separation of ourselves as distinct from Europe the way that it would have done decades ago. You know, those roots about freedom of speech, freedom of expression, representative government, that the government has to submit to the rule of law, you know, they have their roots ultimately in the UK and with British thinkers and the Bill of Rights and John Locke and the Magna Carta, things like that, not in Europe. And Europe's history is of compulsory religion, you know, banning the translation of the Bible into the vernacular so individuals can understand it. The idea, you know, it's fundamentally built into a lot of European countries and ultimately to that Roman Catholic heritage. Religion is something that is top down. You are told what to believe by your priest, and it is not your job to have freedom of conscience to decide what to believe, to read the Bible for yourself, to prove what is true. It is your job to just say, yes, sir, and obey without understanding. And crucially, without proof. You just submit to the hierarchy that you find yourself in. And so by encouraging Europe to get back to the roots, I mean, they think that they're encouraging the opposite of Mertz. They're encouraging Europe to go in the opposite direction to the one Mertz is trying to lead it in, this kind of bastion of anti-Trumpism. And sure, Friedrich Merz is opposed to a lot of these alternative for Deutschland politicians and a lot of these fringe politicians across Europe. But by encouraging Europe to return to its roots, they're encouraraging Europe to go in this anti-American direction.
Yeah, and I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of why America was founded. America was founded by people that were persecuted in Europe. And that's why many of them migrated to America and the Library of Congress, they have a great article on how it shows that the founding colonies, they were founded on the religious principles that they were persecuted for in Europe. They could not execute, they could not live their religion in Europe. That's why they fled to America to start a new life. And to me, it is strikingly understandable because I grew up in Germany, in a small town of Germany, and we had one church, a Catholic church right at the center, the tallest building in the whole town. And I came here to America and I to town, and I see 5-6 different churches, all with different names, and none of them looks like a Catholic church. So there's religious pluralism here that you just don't have in Europe. So you have to understand, why do we have that in America? Why is it so different, the religious community here, than it is in Europe, and has to everything to do with America's founding? But the Catholic Church has done a great job at plotting out that history, essentially, that even the religious class of America today does not understand why America is so unique. And Marco Rubio, he called America a child of Europe, and we can play that clip.
Because for us Americans, our home may be in the Western Hemisphere, but we will always be a child of Europe.
And he also said that America and Europe are spiritually connected.
Our disagreements come from our profound sense of concern about a Europe with which we are connected, not just economically, not just militarily. We are connected spiritually, and we are connected culturally.
Now, that's the opposite of why America was founded. America was founded by those founding fathers and those early pilgrims to give an alternative to the religious persecution in Europe. We had the Inquisition that raged in Europe for centuries, and some estimate that 50 million people have been killed in that Inquisition, and many more have been turned from their beliefs away to Catholicism, or a later version of Protestantism. That's not very much different than Catholicism. And a lot of it was to root out any belief that associates more closely to the Old Testament or to the New Testament or to Jewish beliefs. Jews have been persecuted and even burned in the Inquisition. So it was an attempt to separate this false version of Christianity away from the Jewish heritage, away from what the Jews believe. It was a persecution of the Jewish people, but America was founded famously on Judeo-Christian values, and that does not exist in Europe. The Inquisition specifically targeted to get rid of it.
You can see this in groups like the Alternative for Deutschland, this group that a lot of people in the MAGA movement, from Elon Musk to J.D. Vance, have kind of embraced as their German arm in some ways. We were watching the Alternative for Deutschland long before Donald Trump won the election in 2023. But you saw this switch in November, where they were very, very anti-American. And then they kind of shut up about that. But even though there's still tension in the party, there are online influencers that from the AfD that are trying to kind of rebrand themselves as European MAGA. And there are still a lot of people in the party, though, that are like, no, we don't, like, we hate America. We don't want to be on the Trump train. They're struggling to impose some message discipline, I think, as it's called, particularly in East Germany, where the Alternative for Deutschland is strongest. There's a lot that really don't like this idea of, you know, keeping quiet and being in the Trump administration's good books or in MAGA's good books. This is an organization that, you know, routinely you look at the views of their politicians, and American soldiers to them were just as bad as Nazis during World War II. It's just that America was on the winning side and got to write the history books. Like, that is the way that they view the world. It was, I think it was Friday, was the anniversary of the Dresden bombings. And this is a huge moment for the AfD, because this is their biggest opportunity of the year to portray themselves as the innocent victims and the Allies as the bloodthirsty butchers who came along and bombed Dresden for no reason. Which, you know, I think you can debate as to whether the war could have been won without bombing Dresden or not, but quite clearly it was not unprovoked aggression or anything comparable to what the Nazis did to country after country after country, and certainly not the way that the Alternative for Deutschland view it. So this is a movement that you look at what they say for public consumption as opposed to American consumption, they are not America's friends. And you had the alternative for Deutschland was at the Munich Security Conference. They had their representatives invited this year for the first time because of J.D. Vance criticizing them last year, or criticizing the conference organizers last year, for leaving the alternative for Deutschland out. So you have MAGA actively encouraging through rhetoric, like in Marco Rubio's speech, Europe returning to its cultural heritage, but also taking steps like this where they're promoting and pushing forwards and raising the stature of a group that has some prominent members who are neo-Nazis, and they're being encouraged and promoted and having, in practical ways, taking on more authority thanks to the Trump administration.
Yeah, and one thing that Marco Rubio said in his speech was, leave the guilt, leave the shame behind. He wants a Europe that's unshackled from the past, not burdened down by whatever he implied there, probably the Holocaust or other historic evils that were caused on the European continent. But he says, you need to be free. And some of that thinking is Europe has been letting in migrants to make up for their past. Europe has been being oppressed by whatever. And now they need to be free from all those historic shackles and be able to realize their historic greatness again. But what is that historic greatness anyways? Like, Donald Trump has a message, make America great again. He wants to go back to the founding. But what is Germany's, what is Europe's founding? It was founded by, many would say, Charlemagne, who brutally butchered the people in Saxon for being not Catholic, essentially, for being heretics to the faith. And today, Europe is taking the same approach to free speech. If you have a heretical view that's outside mainstream, we persecute you. So it's not different. It's a different brand, obviously, but it's the same principle that if you are not the mainstream one, we can suppress you. So it's a fundamental misunderstanding of European history, as we said earlier, that encourages this rise again. But the things that America disagrees with are the same things that America would have disagreed with for centuries.
And I think in this context, it's worth talking about Sir Keir Starmer's speech to the Munich Security Conference as well. I think just a shameful address from a British prime minister. Here's a flavor of what he had to say.
Now, we are not the Britain of the Brexit years anymore. And that is because we know that in a dangerous world, we would not take control by turning inward. We would surrender it. And I won't let that happen. That's why I devote time as Prime Minister to Britain's leadership on the world stage. And that's why I'm here today. Because I am clear, there is no British security without Europe, and no European security without Britain. That is the lesson of history, and is today's reality as well.
And his government wants to overturn the Brexit vote. They want to overturn the will of the people. They make no secret about that. They know that they probably couldn't get away with doing it. So instead, they're doing it by stealth, and they're trying to come up with all of these different agreements with the European Union. There are several of those that were put forwards in the run-up to the Munich Security Conference, or announced that they were going to work towards. They're going to bring in environmental regulation, regulation on farming and agriculture, and just get Britain subservient to Europe in as many ways as possible. The military was one of the key ways there, as he talked about in that speech. And that came up a lot. Boris Pistorius talked about the alliance with Britain. That came up in this joint letter that we mentioned earlier between this British and German general, and they were celebrating all the things that they're doing together. I mean, Britain is... take it, Keir Starmer and Donald Trump, they are philosophically very different people, temperamentally very different backgrounds, very different approaches to politics. I mean, they're both making the same mistakes for very different reasons. They're both working to empower Europe. And that's the picture that we got. And I think that's the picture that ties right in with Bible prophecy of a Europe that is openly hostile to America and certainly to British values. That Keir Starmer and Britain, I think we're not powerful enough to get the same kind of condemnation and treatment that Donald Trump got. While at the same time, we really try to play nice and promote and give all this love and help towards Europe. And we can get into those prophecies. But maybe before we do, I just wanted to check, Joshua, if there was anything else. There were a number of other speeches. Anything else you think that's worth discussing from the conference this weekend?
Just on the point of Britain, Keir Starmer giving that speech and having his stance on reversing Brexit. From Germany's perspective, it's like a prodigal son, a repentant son returning to their parents and showing like, okay, see, Britain has tried it. They wanted to do it on their own and it does not work. This shows that a rule-based order, democracy, unity, that is the better way. But that unity comes with terms. Submission to Germany's standards, submission to Germany's rule. So it's unity, as wonderful as it sounds, but it comes with consequences. You do give up a lot of sovereignty. And that's what Germany praises, because they are benefiting from it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's just sad to see a British government. I mean, really, what we need is more independence from Europe. We need to get out from under the European Court of Human Rights that is such a curse on Britain, that has taken a bunch of principles that did have their grounding in England's past and heritage and values similar to those reflected in things like the US Declaration of Independence, and then have been twisted and taken by lawyers and become this excuse to make it so that it's almost impossible to deport migrants. And almost like it puts a straitjacket on politics and says this very narrow set of prescribed opinions is all you're allowed to have, all you're allowed to support. And anything that would make the radical changes necessary to, well, just even turn the country around economically, let alone morally and socially, to make the country prosperous while they get outlawed, because all of these principles and then the whole scaffolding that's been constructed on things like the European Convention on Human Rights. Britain needs to be breaking out of those shackles. And instead, we've got a government that is bringing us under German conditions and back to Europe. Now, we've played quite a lot of clips from the security conference. We wanted to bring you some of those highlights. But like we've been saying, the overall picture there is this one of Britain and America loving Europe, and then you've got this, or at least loving, say, a version of Europe, maybe not the current European leaders, but from Donald Trump, that he really does, and he is promoting that version of European heritage, of the Holy Roman Empire, ultimately. And meanwhile, you've got this growing hostility for the United States and for Britain. And this is exactly what the Bible warns about. And Herbert W. Armstrong warned so powerfully about this. And I thought, well, we've had a lot of clips. Let's have some clips from Mr. Armstrong where he talked about exactly what you saw this weekend in Europe. Here's a conclusion of a radio broadcast that he gave decades ago, where he talked about all of these Bible prophecies that say that Israel is, instead of trusting in God, they're going to trust in foreign lovers. Here's what he had to say.
Speaking of our nation, and he's speaking here of spiritual harlotry, playing harlot with many lovers, in other words, allies. We're playing a harlot when we should depend on God, when we should consider that we are married to him. He's our husband, and a husband is the protector of the wife, and we are in the position of being the wife. Israel is married to God. We should rely on our Savior. He's our protector. He's our husband. But no, we make an alliance with other nations, and we rely on them. And we make lovers out of them instead of loving God. Thou shalt love the eternal thy God with all your mind and heart and soul and strength. That's the first and great commandment. We violate that as a nation. Now, I don't think we realize we're doing it. I don't think we do at all. I think we sincerely think. We've just kidded ourselves into thinking. We've been deceived into believing that we're really relying on God. But then, you know, we think that God is sort of a myth, and he's far off, and maybe he's not real, and maybe he couldn't really help us. So we must depend on something that is real. We must depend on something that we can see. And so now we're so afraid of Russia that the United States government feels that it must take a what we call a calculated risk, you know, and try to build up Germany and Central Europe against Russia. All right, you'll see what we're building. And you're not going to have to wait more than 15 years to see it, and I don't think you'll wait that long. Would not that land be greatly polluted? You have played the harlot with many lovers, that is our allies, and would you return to me, says the Eternal? Verse 3, therefore the showers have been withheld, the spring rain has not come, yet you have a harlot's brow. You refuse to be ashamed. Are we ashamed because we're doing these things? No, we think it's all right.
One of the things I think that is so fascinating about this radio broadcast is he ties in these two simultaneous trends that we see right now that seem very different. He talked about America loving Europe, empowering Europe, but then he said, well, really the root of this is we don't want to depend on the United States, that it's our religion is shallow. We see God as something vague and unreal and something that we pay lip service to only. He's not someone that we obey. He's not someone with power in our lives. And so we see him as powerless. And the idea of our national security is to depend on God it sounds crazy to us. And so instead we'll build up Europe and depend on Europe. And so he tied that in to our religion and our flaws in our religion, and a religion that talks a lot about God, but then doesn't obey. Here's how he concluded that broadcast.
We pray to him, but we do evil. You do as an individual, most of you. When everything is going fine and you're in good health and you're prosperous and everything is going serenely and nicely for you, well, you haven't any time for God now, have you? Well, some of you have. Most of you haven't. No, you're too busy with other things. Now, let's continue on there with the sixth verse, this third chapter. The Eternal said also unto me, in the days of Josiah the king, that is, he said to Jeremiah, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel has done? And here it says that she has actually justified herself more than her treacherous sister Judah. But I see time's up. I've got to stop right there. It shows the two nations, Israel and Judah, and what they've done. And he goes on here specifically to say many things that are going to happen in your town and in our America.
He really was ahead of his time. Our religious movement in America is flawed. The religious revival is flawed. There's no substance to it. We don't look to God for defense. And so we encourage Europe to revive its roots, to revive its heritage, America's military spending, its economic outlays, the amount of money that it's spending to uphold its position in the world. It's just unsustainable. It can't last much longer. So we won't look to God to get out of our problems. We'll look to Europe.
Yeah, those are some powerful points, especially with the shallowness of religion. And often you see that people say that God is not real to them. He is not intervening in world affairs. But the founding of America does show that God gave the American people an opportunity to live a new religious life, which they could not have lived in Europe. God raised up that country to show them, I give you all the freedom you need to obey me, to go back to God's law, to go back to what the Bible teaches. What are you going to do? And now we are to the point where they do not even remember that founding. They don't even remember the difference between the religious oppression and the freedom in America. The conquest of libraries said the persecution of Europe, the religious persecution, will be remembered for generations. But that seems to be over now. Now we are at a point where there's little difference between the religions anymore, because everyone is just doing what is right in their own eyes, and they're not seeking God. They're not using this opportunity to turn to God, to use the religious freedom really to obey God, as Mr. Armstrong said.
I mean, that's a good point. It gets back to what we were saying earlier about roots, that to America's founding fathers, God was a lot more real to many of them. I mean, even to some of people like Benjamin Franklin, that kind of had this deist religion that didn't necessarily believe in the literal truth of the Bible or the God as described in the Bible. And there was still a substance to their faith more than you have in the MAGA movement, where in a very real sense, they looked to God for defense and protection when they were fighting for their independence in a way that America fears to do today. And that history itself is a rebuke to the United States. I mean, that it is the history of the Bible is, but America's own history really does rebuke modern America. But when you bring in the Bible, you have a clear picture of what is coming, and you see what is building, and you can see what the Bible foretells is almost there. And you've got the lover's prophecy, you've got prophecies about Europe building a trade alliance against America. Isaiah 23 talks about Europe as a market of nations. And Revelation chapter 18 talks about this Holy Roman Empire as a new commercial power that dominates the merchants of the world are rich. It's a new financial system that is built, not just built without America, but built to shut America out, to bring America down. And once that financial backbone of America is broken, the industrial backbone, the huge amount of wealth that fuels that huge military spending, well, then America is taken captive. That's what Bible prophecy says. And you know, that's a sobering warning. It's one that many dismiss. But I just wanted to conclude with one more quote from Mr. Armstrong, where he warned powerfully about this.
And I wonder, sometimes I think I'm wasting my time, my friends, to tell you these things. Wouldn't you rather be just amused than entertained? Wouldn't you rather just pass away the time, not knowing what's going to come on you? Or would you rather be warned before it happens and have a way to avoid all of this so it need not come? You can avert it. You can avoid it. You can have supernatural protection. It doesn't need to happen to you. But it's going to happen, I'm telling you. You can go on lulling yourself to sleep. You can go to the movies. You can see the crime pictures and look at it on television. You can lull yourself to sleep with pleasing things that amuse and entertain you. And you can hide the truth from yourself. But there's going to be a day of reckoning. On the other hand, you can open up your ears and you can open your mind and you can really begin to tremble at these things and the reality of them. They're coming from God Almighty. And you can seek the eternal, your God, with your whole heart. And you can come under His protection, and then you'll have only happiness ahead. Now it's up to you. You're going to make your decision. You're hearing the prophecies of God Almighty. And God help you to open your ears and to realize the seriousness of this thing and not to take it so lightly. Not to think, oh, well, we hear everything today. We hear any old kind of a crackpot, and we hear all kinds of fanaticism. Yes, I know you do.
And that is a sobering warning, a sobering subject. But really, this is what we see building in the Munich Security Conference and in all of the news that we get so regularly throughout Europe. This Holy Roman Empire that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote about for decades, it's here. It's almost fully formed. And now is the time, as he said in that clip there, for urgent action. Now is the time to really seek God. And we have so many resources designed to help you do that on our website, thetrumpet.com. We really want you to follow up on these videos, to study, to not take this just, okay, well, I've heard it and I'm going to believe it, but to prove it for yourself, to dig into the Bible. And in doing so, to get to know the God of the Bible. I mean, we've got a Holy Roman Empire in prophecy is a great resource to give you more information about Bible prophecy. But I think perhaps the biggest area that I could point you to, or the most important thing I point you to at this point, is our free book, Mystery of the Ages. that Mr. Armstrong wrote, and ultimately I think you can prove that God inspired, not just to help you understand Bible prophecy, but to help you know the God that gave that prophecy, to understand him more, to get to know God, to build a relationship with him, to have him be real to you and have him in your life and have him as somebody that you can defend or rely on for your defense, for your protection. Someone who is a very real help. And so you can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com, and we'd be very happy to send that to you. So you can study that and bring the Bible to life. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Joshua. I think that's been a really interesting, really fascinating discussion about what we saw this weekend.
Very good to be here again.
And it's been a while since we've had you on. We'll have to find an excuse to get you on again more quickly. Thank you very much as well to George Haddad for engineering and production. If you have any questions, any comments, you can get in touch with us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We'll have our regular Week in Review show on Friday. And until then, keep watching your world.